episode 450 or 543. Oh, this is just going to be one of those episodes, isn't it? Yes, we are back with this episode of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, I think. And tonight we have
Edmund from Greenville. And I would love to do my tribute to Mike Ehrmantraub, but that would mean the last 10 minutes of this episode would just be silence.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and this will be the episode where we get to see an old long-lost friend. Oh, I hate how scheduling mixes up these things.
Yes, indeed. And, well, you know, you start up at the top, and it's just a quick, short drop right to the bottom. That's all I'm going to say. We're going to have a lot to talk about here, but we are going to go over the best three shows of the week and the worst performing three shows of the week, at least according to our aggregate Critical Myth family scoring. But first, before we go into any of that, Edmund, if you could give us a disclaimer.
Absolutely. We will discuss just about anything we feel like and anything that might have happened in these episodes. So if you haven't seen them, you will be spoiled. But especially with our new Wednesday to Wednesday scheduling, we're trying to give you just as much time as you possibly can to catch up.
Yes, indeed. And we are going to go ahead and start with our number three show. And this was actually the number three show last time, so I guess we are looking at a bit of consistency here. And that would be The Walking Dead. And here's the promo.
Microsoft Surface presents scenes from the next episode of The Walking Dead.
I've killed people. I don't even know how many by now. But I know why they're all dead. People out there are always looking for an angle. They measure you by what they can take from you. It's all about survival now. At any cost.
For more video, go to amc.com.
And, Gary, if you don't mind doing the recap here?
Yes, absolutely. We're talking about... Oh, jeez, it's AMC. We're talking about AMC's Walking Dead...
Oh, yeah, I told you. It's that kind of show already.
You're right. We're talking about The Walking Dead, Season 5, Episode 12, Remember. Molding into a new lifestyle proves to be difficult for the group.
Yes, indeed. If only, you know, they hadn't done this bizarre crossover with that that swinging show from a few years back. But anyway. No, this one came in at, let's see, where is this at? An 8.5? 8.5. Well, I'm going to be honest here. This is a great example of why we engage our audience over on the VOG Network page, because once again, we have Flacco Jones giving us not just his opinion on this episode, but also giving his score. And as we've mentioned before, when we have scores over on the VOG Network site, they get added to our own. So it was Flacco that gave this one a perfect 10. The rest of us gave it an 8, but that perfect 10 brought it up to number 3. Otherwise, it would have dropped a bit, and we're maybe going to talk a little bit about why. But first, Flacco says, "This is my favorite Walking Dead episode this season. Again, I have no clue what happens in the source material, but I love the way things are setting up. When they mentioned exiling members, that raised a red flag for me. Deanna can call it a death sentence all she wants, but if those exiled did survive, they know about Alexandria and could bring others in the future. The video interviews had me reminiscing about past seasons, especially during Carol's oh-so-honest performance." Yeah, that's actually a fairly good point about maybe yes. You should know what happened to those people that you exiled from your safe zone there, Deanna. But Gary, I'll get to you because I know that we both are fairly well-versed in this particular section of the story. Edmund, yes. You give it an 8 versus Flacco's effusive 10. What were your thoughts as someone who is not aware of where this is going and maybe was a little bit uncertain as to the true nature of Alexandria?
Well, I mean, I guess this is one of those cases where I was giving it an 8 as a what I thought was a very good setup. Certainly after the introduction with Aaron and the whole negotiations and getting there, then to come into this this new type of community, this seemingly rather idyllic with all sort of all mod cons. as they say back in Britain, modern conveniences, and even video games, and this seemingly very standard old school suburban existence. Kind of going along, feeling I think a lot like the rest of the group of especially given all they've already been through. This really does seem too good to be true. But I liked the mix of their wariness and also just those little hints about this community may not be quite as stable and unassailable as they seem to think. Certainly the whole scouting party and abusing the walker or roamer. I do like how they keep coming up with these slightly different words that everybody uses for other than calling them zombies. I thought they built very well to that endpoint of, okay, we're getting the lay of the land, and yeah, if these people aren't quite as strong as we're starting to suspect, we will just go ahead and take over, which I thought was a very ominous ending, but one that they set up quite well through all of the things they were introducing with Alexandria.
Yeah, that was the one thing that I really like about this part of the story is that, you know, one could very easily ask the question, what's the big deal? I mean, we've seen them run through this a million times. You know, they go to yet another town or a community, and there's drama, and inevitably, you know, they have to deal with this conflict and everything else. But what I really like about this particular episode and about this storyline in general is that we're seeing it after the group has gone through a lot, and they've learned not to trust people very much. And that's the lesson that they've taken home and to heart. And now we get this situation where Rick is really willing to almost be the type of person that he would have hated once upon a time, and where, you know, he flat out tells Deanna over and over again, you know, people only look at you for what they can take from you. And that's exactly what he's doing this whole time, as he's sitting there and thinking, we can do this the nice way or the hard way, but we're not going anywhere. And it's kind of chilling when you get to the end and you realize that that's where his head is going. Who else was really hoping that the game that they wanted to play, Carl to play with them, is The Last of Us? Just thought that would be fairly funny. But anyway, yeah, Gary, how about you? Your thoughts on this one?
Oh, well, to hit the Carl video game thing, these guys have had months and months and years to play those games. They're probably really kicking his ass in those games. But towards the end, I had to go back and actually rewatch the episode to see that sort of mentality of Rick. You know, as we felt that they were feeling out our group, I started to realize that, you know, Rick was really, you know, was really continuing to size everyone else up and that he hasn't let up. However, you know, there are glimmers of hope because, you know, as we saw with the raiding party and we didn't agree with the toying of the walkers or whatever. At the same time, when they came back and there was an issue, the leader, you know, basically backed up our group, if you want to call it that, and, you know, said that, you know, they're here now. They have every right to think or complain or do whatever it is that the existing people do, that they've been fully welcomed in. And I found that to be an interesting thing compared to some of the other situations we've been in where they're watched, their weapons are stripped and they can't access them again at all, or, you know, things like this. So the weapons were taken, but they could get them when they were going hunting again. They wanted them to come out on, you know, and participate in their society, giving them different jobs and trustworthy jobs to have. So I like the fact that while there are issues, that this community is actively trying to embrace them. So you get a sense that while they don't do things the same way as our group does, it might not be that they're completely wrong, just different. And, you know, if we think about the hospital in Atlanta, how they sort of reached where they were at. Now we're, you know, in another group. It seems like the groups are starting to get a little bit better. They're not quite the horror stories that some of the other places they've been at is. So, it appears that this, you know, this might actually be hope, that this might be something far enough along that would work out.
Yeah, kind of the mentality, I guess you could say, or the thought process that if any group of people has lasted this long, they're the survivors. And the question is going to be, do you continue to be insular and think only in terms of your group and to hell with everybody else? Or do you start wondering, well, what happens if those of us who have survived this long actually try to work together? And maybe Alexandria is kind of that first opportunity for Rick to really look at it from that perspective, because if it hadn't been for the toxic situation at the hospital in Atlanta, that may have actually worked out okay for them. Of course it didn't, but you know, not everyone is going to turn out to be cannibals. It is a little bit unusual or interesting that Deanna is pushing so hard for them to integrate. I don't know about you, Edmund, but were you kind of wondering, like, why is she trying so hard to convince them?
Yes, definitely. Almost the thought, I mean, creeping in, I mean, in terms of having a community that seems so potentially sustainable, the whole concept of needing a decent sized gene pool did pop into my head. But another thing I really, Flacco Jones already commented on it, but I did love that device of her saying, you know, can I videotape these? Just the fact that you actually have a working video camera, but also then the way it allowed them to integrate those the video interviews themselves, which it's a completely different context, but was actually reminding me of some of those old classic MASH episodes where they had the reporter coming in and interviewing the all of the doctors and nurses and getting that other perspective, and then certainly the way it got used in terms of Carol's whole performance just getting that sort of spine tingling realization of like, oh, she's role playing season one Carol, so they don't know how much of a badass she is. Of course, just played up by Daryl's reaction, you know, as the one member of the group who's really just up front, not buying into any of this, because this has never been part of his existence even before the apocalypse. So, and his reaction to how ridiculous she looks, but of course she's doing exactly what will allow her to get fully integrated and get all of the info and intelligence they're going to need.
Exactly. I love just the fact that she's sitting there all smiles after dropping the biggest gun in the entire gang.
Yes.
on the tray table. And just then Daryl on video walking around with the dead possum in his hand.
Yes. I brought dinner.
It's just wonderfully ridiculous. Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a good start. And what I'm only slightly worried about is the idea that maybe people aren't going to be willing to embrace doing something that's not a constant, you know, fight for survival. And are they going to continue to shove in all of these little action vignettes of going out and killing walkers just because they need to have some kind of action? I mean, I know that there was it had to highlight the plot point of the gun not being there anymore. But other than that, it just felt like, we're going to show that we're not going soft by going on occasional excursions to go and stab. I'm hoping that they can just focus on the human drama for a little bit, because certainly, I mean, Gary was kind of alluding to it last show when we were talking about this, the mild spoilers for the season finale. All this is going somewhere, and it's not going to be, you know, mild for forever. But they do have to at least have some episodes with less action, just if nothing else, but to save the budget, maybe.
And
you need to get to know these people.
Yeah, and as much as I think they were sort of the infamous beginning of season two when some people felt that the show just completely lost its momentum at the farm. I was not necessarily one of those, but that's partially because I'm not that big a horror guy. I've never actually been that, you know, the whole, you know, zombie on human action is not what attracts me to the show. But I think the even though this potentially has the the same hallmarks. It's a completely different situation in terms of coming into this existing community. It's not just literally hanging out on the farm and the porch the way they were back in season two. So even if things do sort of slow down on the zombie action side, there are some far more interesting dynamics and tensions going on with this scenario than there was back with Herschel and the idyll at the farm back then.
That is quite true. Gary, any last thoughts on this particular episode?
I love the fact that at least initially they were all sleeping in the same room, in the same house together, even though they had the options to sleep in, you know, other houses that were decked out just as nicely and, you know, and that they, you know, have all the provisions. So they have no reason except their own doubts or worries to not have all the creature comforts they want. It's so I want to say it's almost like, oh, here you can have everything you used to have. You just have to give up everything you've learned. And I thought it was sort of a nice little thing that they're not just, you know, that they have learned all these hard lessons and they're not willing to give it up that easy.
Yeah, the one thing that at least, and I'm not trying to be leading at all here, but there is a part of this where Aaron did come right out and say, and I think that Deanna is also alluding to this, that they're well aware of the fact that they have been isolated from the real ravages of the apocalypse for quite some time behind their walls. And not knowing the story of why they had to exile people out of their group, it's maybe not entirely impossible that they look at a group like Rick's and say, maybe that's something that we either A, lost or, quote, never had. Maybe there's a reason they're looking for people who know how to survive to be so integrated into their group. Not just gene pool wise, but, you know, it is a point, though. I believe there was somebody that I was talking to where they pointed out that they mentioned that Carol is working with the elderly people. And you see some people with some kids, but you don't see a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of young women, in fact. So, you never know. They could be looking at the long-term benefits.
Perhaps they just have a unique skill set that we.
So they're all Liam Neeson? Holy cow. That is perfect. Those walkers don't. It's going to be the saunterers that are going to be the real threat this time around. But anyhow, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they continue to play this out. Of course, knowing kind of where this is going, always willing and ready to accept any kind of curveballs that they throw our way. But I am looking forward to some of the fun that they can give us as we continue here in Alexandria. And, you know, again, obviously they have put a lot of time into setting up this place as a long-term storytelling locale. Let's put it that way. Let's see. The number two show for this week is one that, Edmund, you're going to be able to tell us a little bit about because it is Better Call Saul.
Yes.
Here's the promo.
I needed help. That's all. You know, if I could do it, anybody could.
Well, my hat is off to you. So here we are. And patent law is something you...
Oh, yeah. In fact, I do so many patent cases, I should probably just go ahead and specialize already. So what do we got?
I feel silly asking this, but before I show you my invention, would you mind signing a non-disclosure agreement?
You got it. Yeah, no problem.
It's my idea of a lifetime. If Fisher-Price or Play School ever got their hands on this.
No worries.
You ready?
I may have seen one of these before.
All right, and if you could do the recap for us, Edmund.
Absolutely. Let me take a deep breath because we're again in AMC land. This is Better Call Saul, Season 1, Episode 5, Alpine Shepherd Boy. When his efforts to drum up new business are interrupted by alarming news, Jimmy is pressured to make a difficult choice. And in classic AMC style, yes, that kind of covers what's going on, but the way things actually spooled out isn't necessarily related at all to that. So,
Oh.
Yes, I'm here. Don't know why it did that, but we're now reconnected, so we can just chop. I was just going to keep going on and on, but yeah, we can just chop out this middle bit. but no, that's
okay. Why would we want to do something like that? This is just, it's Veritas. That's what it is.
Yes.
Anyway, go ahead, Edmund. If you could just go ahead and tell us, why did you give this an 8.5, which made it the number two show for the week?
Yes, this is just audio verite, folks, in honor of Alfred Maisley's, who just passed away as well. But we're not going to get maudlin into all these people who keep dying. Meanwhile, on Better Call Saul, I mean the show does just keep improving. It's really hitting its stride. Saul, who is still Jimmy, is starting to build up his business. We finally got the background on his strange. Electricity phobic, space blanket wearing brother, who was one of the partners in this major firm that he's sort of having his battles with. So it really filled in those details nicely. The little bit from the end of last episode where Michael McKean had to dash out of the house to retrieve a paper or steal a paper from his neighbor got played out very nicely with the old lady, of course, calling the cops. Because her paper got stolen, and a very nice little nod to eventual subject matter of Breaking Bad, when they see all of the camp stove fuel that he's got stashed by his back door, and thinking he's a tweaker. But just a nice subtle little nod. But did a very nice job of continuing to build Jimmy's situation. The way he's sort of slowly getting his act together. And then as I mentioned at the top of the episode. This is actually a case where I had actually turned off the episode and then realized no, there was still time to go in it, and went back because they went through all of Jimmy's story and him taking on his sort of accepting his fate and taking on his new role as an elder care lawyer doing wills and hanging out at nursing homes and giving out Jello cups with his picture and number at the bottom of them. And then went to commercial break and came back to just give Jonathan Banks as Mike Ehrmantraub, who's been showing up as the parking lot attendant at the courthouse, just this amazing coda of about 10 minutes of showing him at the end of his day and going home and staking out this woman who we're pretty sure is his daughter. And of course the famous granddaughter who will be showing up in Breaking Bad. And it was basically because, I mean, he's just a poor, lonely, single guy. Just completely silent and just giving Jonathan Banks a chance to just act with his eyes and face. And it was really so just a really amazing choice and just worked incredibly well. So that's what pushed the rating up. Actually, I think I rated the last episode at the similar rating, but in this case, it might have been a little bit lower if it was just the Jimmy stuff in the background. But then that final act just really pushed it up a bit.
And normally we would put the show that got the most votes, the most scores, as above one that had the same total score. But I wanted to put this one up a little bit because we did start this show off at a very low point, and it seems to have very quickly gained momentum. By the way, Alpine Shepherd Boy?
This is Vince Gilligan. I can't remember who exactly who was the writer on this one, but that was kind of the turning point when he's going around to all of these calls he's gotten as a result of the publicity stunt he pulled in the previous episode, including some hilarious stuff of a toilet that is intended to help potty train your kid that is actually the most raunchy and obscene speaking toilet you've ever heard, completely unbeknownst to the very straight-laced religious man who had put it together. Basically nothing is working until he comes to this little old lady who just wants to do her will and is showing all her Hummel figurines. And you see her coming down the chairlift very slowly, because she finally found the Alpine Shepherd boy, and then when he's completing the appointment and saying it's like, yes, we'll be $140. You know, you can pay 70 now and 70 when I come back with the forms, you know, and she just pulls out her purse and hands him 140 cash right on the spot. And that's when the light bulb goes off that, oh, wait a minute, I can actually start making some money here if I just work a little bit. So it's not quite the high end lawyering he was hoping to do, but it's Jimmy McGill finally starting to get his act together.
And I believe Alpine Shepherd Boy makes for the perfect overall title for this week's episode. Anyhow, very good. I'm glad that Better Call Saul is starting to live up to its forebears' reputation somewhat. But there we are. Well, we have a show that a little bit of a surprise as far as hitting the top spot this week. And that would be Star Wars Rebels. Let's go ahead and run this promo.
At last, a fight that might be worthy of my time.
We got ties closing in.
Because it all
How many?
Comes down
Too many.
To this.
No! Now I know there's something stronger than fear. The Force.
The season finale. Star Wars Rebels Fire Across the Galaxy. Monday night at 9, only on Disney XD. A fight that might be worthy of my time.
We got ties closing in.
Because it all
How many?
Comes down
Too many.
To this.
No!
Now I know there's something stronger than fear. The Force.
The season.
All right, and Gary, if you don't mind doing this recap.
Absolutely. We're talking about Star Wars Rebels, Season 1, Episode 15. Season 1 ends with the Rebels infiltrating an Imperial fleet to perform a daring rescue.
That's right, and this one came in at the top spot with an average of 8.75. I believe that actually is the highest scored episode of the show. Let me quickly check that. But while I am, Gary, why such a high praise for this episode, do you think?
Well, I think it was the way that they painted the TIE fighter with all the different stripes.
That was nice.
Yeah, that was a cute little thing. No, it was the revelation at the end. Their covert connection to the Rebel forces, codenamed Fulcrum, turned out to be Ahsoka Tano, grown up, no less. As we closed the original Clone Wars cartoon series out, they had ended roughly, I'm guessing at this point, about 20 years prior. So Ahsoka is now 20 years older, a full adult, and heavily involved with the rebellion at this time. So it was a complete surprise. Nobody had really seen it laid out like this, and to the best of my knowledge, there were no hints or clues given as to Fulcrum's identity. But for a lot of fans who felt we never got a proper closure for Ahsoka in the cartoon series, and I was very excited to hear it, and I tweeted it perhaps a little bit earlier than I should have. John, I apologize for the spoilers.
Oh, no big deal.
On your behalf, but she wasn't a character solely developed for the cartoon series, and she really hit a nice tender spot with a lot of viewers. She was Anakin's Padawan, if you want to think about it, till she was kicked out of the Jedi Order, hence not a Jedi anymore and not under the purview of Order 66. So she managed to escape, obviously. Of course, she is actually a full Jedi with all the powers and everything like that, but it was nice to have follow-up on her. We've always wondered what happened to her since we, of course, never saw her in the original movies or any of the prequels at all. So we were sort of wondering where she ended up, what happened to her. And so now we might actually have a chance to see that. More importantly, at the very end of the episode, they foreshadowed foreshadowed things by showing Darth Vader actually appearing. And everyone, including myself, of course, is wondering when Ahsoka is going to come up against Vader. And, you know, well, what happens when they both realize who they are? And, you know, especially in the case of Vader or Anakin, you know, where they have gone to and what's going to happen. So that is really the big cliffhanger for the season. Yes, we've gotten a new cast of Rebels, and we've seen goofy episodes. We've seen nice episodes. But this really snuck in under the radar, and it really sets the tone for the whole next season, as far as I'm concerned. This was intentionally started off the series to be a lighthearted, more kids-friendly show. And somehow the producer, Dave Filoni, has managed to drag this back more and more into Clone Wars territory. And when I say that, I mean they're creating a show that not only kids can enjoy, but adults can enjoy as well. And they've pulled it back a little bit. And with these latest revelations, I'm really anxious to see season two. So what do you think, John? I mean, I don't want to say the Clone Wars is completely back, but gosh, it sure smelt and tasted like it.
The feeling that I get is that maybe with the Clone Wars, they realized that they started off in a spot and grew from there that didn't necessarily draw in the younger audience that they were hoping to, and wasn't as expansive in terms of the audience. It really was an older, you know, teenage and up type of show after a while.
Yes, and yeah, that's true.
I feel like what they did here, and I alluded to it before, that they kind of were very stealthy in presenting this series, you know, slanting it somewhat younger in tone, but giving just those hints that it could maybe go a little bit darker. And the last four or five episodes that really strung together a continuous storyline finally seemed to bring back this idea of a more serious Star Wars universe. Maybe not, you know, certainly not grimdark or anything like that. I mean, we're not going to see, you know, widespread slaughter, but we certainly saw a lot more dark overtones in this particular arc. And the fact that it went, you know, one could have easily concluded that this season would end just in a way that really hit the reset button and let them go off on new adventures. And, you know, the Inquisitor would be out there still coming after them because, you know, that was the big highlight of a villain for the season. You know, the very beginning of the season was Darth Vader handing the mission to the Inquisitor to go after these guys and all that. So it would have been easy for them to do that. And what I really liked about this episode was that they took those expectations and really completely undermined them. I wasn't kidding. Last show, when we were talking about the news about Sarah Michelle Gellar joining the cast and everything, that the second season, there's really no reason to think it's going to be anything like the first season. It's going to build off of it, but I could easily see them taking a completely new turn. And like you said, almost merging the Clone Wars aesthetic and continuity. Now we know why that continuity was going to stick around. Because it's now going to fold into this, and maybe not in a huge way, but you know they're going to have to, in some way, shape, or form, follow up on that reveal at the end. And retroactively, it actually resolves the one big sticking point with the way the Clone Wars ended, in that one of the main characters was left completely unresolved. Well, now that's not true anymore. So that kind of, like I said, retroactively fixes that problem. You can kind of let the Clone Wars now feel like it kind of ended and did so without any huge issues, because now Rebels really is the follow-up in a certain sense.
Yes, and though remember early on when they said this, that this wasn't Rebels going to be considered continuity for the ongoing series?
It's in canon, and so is Clone Wars. So this, I guess, is explaining that, yeah, they're going to explore. My point was that, you know, Clone Wars was always just kind of, they never finished out that final season, regardless of whether or not they want to call it canon or not. But this really fixes the whole problem of them never going to Ahsoka and saying what happened with her after that, you know, after she left the Jedi Order. So yeah, it's all in the new canon, so to speak. But
yeah.
it by becoming the follow-up to Clone Wars, it really, it takes the series and it picks it up to a new level. Like you said, you could easily see Princess Leia coming into the series next time. You could see maybe occasionally other characters. They've already had these cameos, but now we can take them a little more seriously. It's not just to gain viewers and to get people's eyeballs necessarily. Maybe they're building towards something else, and I kind of look forward to that. Not only that, but, you know, I guess for the kids, they had to have a reason for Ezra to be someone that they could bond to and they could relate to before something really different happened with him. You know, It's a fun show. I know that my son really enjoys it. He, in fact, rewatched the finale earlier this evening, which is why it's so fresh in my mind. And the characters went from the only character that I still feel like they need to really give a little more oomph to is, oddly enough, Hera. She comes across as a little too maternal for me at times. And considering that she was kind of initially introduced as a bit of a kind of, you know, battle-worn type of, you know, she's been in it longer than everybody else type of character. She seems very muted lately, almost like everybody else is doing stuff despite her. So I'm hoping that now that they're linking up with some of the other Rebel Cells out there, that there's going to be more for her in terms of those relationships. But we'll see. Definitely, though, I am glad to see that this season ended with a real bang, with a real change of pace, and it certainly earned the top spot. And that said, I think we're going to go ahead and have our mid-show break. And when we come back, we have three shows towards the bottom, including one that's a bit of a surprise. So stay tuned. All right. Well, let's see how long it takes us to get through some of these episodes, because some of them don't really beg for a whole lot of discussion. But let's go ahead and start here anyway. Coming in, as usual, we don't use the promos for those that come in at the bottom of the list. But number three, coming in at an average of 7.25. So still a little bit above average. Helix, Season 2, Episode 7. Cross-pollination. And if Google wants to help out here, there we go. Things go from bad to worse on the island. Elsewhere, Walker decides to go to Saint Germain after learning about Brother Michael. Okay. Now, Edmund,
yes.
You gave this one a 7.
Mm-hmm.
I give it a 7.5. I'm wondering if that's actually fairly high for us.
Yes.
For this show.
Yeah, this was definitely...
I'm wondering if it was... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, this is definitely a better episode. It's just we still seem to have that half point between us. So yes, it was better. And I mean, the main thing for me was that lo and behold, 7 episodes in, they were actually kind of explaining things a little bit, and you know, and having a plot line actually hold together rather than just being weird and strange and throwing funky music mixes at us.
Yeah, a little bit less of that, and really what made the half point for me was that I was really kind of shocked, in a good way, actually, that they threatened to pull a Jamestown,
yes,
and they actually did a Jamestown, yeah. And in a really brutal way. And I mean, they could have not necessarily twisted that knife by having the kid compelled, even as people are dying all around him,
mm-hmm.
to have... The leader of the cult kind of happily with a smile on his face pushed the kid to drink the killer poison.
Mm-hmm.
But that was definitely, that might right there have been the difference between a 7 and a 7.5 for me. It was the fact that they committed to that plot point and how, which is classic Ron Moore. I mean, when he does do well and actually does pull something like that off, it works beautifully. And it did in this case as well. But that was the reason for the 7.5. I mean, there's a lot of machinations going on. Like you said, they did reveal some stuff. I'm curious what you think they revealed, because I still feel like the story is just not quite coming together for me. Other than the very large, high-level narrative. But yeah. It seems like there's still something missing. But anyway.
Yeah, for me, it was just that whole thing. Actually filling in the backstory of the Addy and the island, and and Michael's, both his, sort of the true implications of being mad and immortal, and just completely willing to just call the herd, as it were, and move on to the next generation. Was very chilling. Absolutely.
Well, at least he knows that Amy is capable of, well, making him happy for a while.
Yes.
she's a girl with skill. Anyway, yeah, it's still not coming together for me. I still feel like this. I really feel like we pegged it down last time, where the whole thing with Paris was really supposed to go a lot more in detail, and then they realized how expensive it was going to be, and just yes. said, forget that nonsense.
Yeah.
Go on an island. That's popular.
Yeah. That's been done before. Apologies,
Gary. Only with some people is it popular. Yeah.
As we're learning, but it was, I keep saying, we go after this show a little bit, but it's entertaining enough. I just really wish, there's a part of me that wishes that it had even half of the seeming continuity and coherence of Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Even if we have to acknowledge that they are really putting their heart on their sleeve and really just saying right up front, they know this is completely crazy. They know that it's not going to all add up at the end of the day, and that it's really just to have a bunch of fun and really have a show that is Saturday Sci-Fi, the series.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, I wish it could just be a little more consistent, a little more together, and just give me something to really sink my teeth into. I don't know. Because there are so many good things that could be happening here that just aren't. But rather than continue to complain about Helix, let's continue to complain about Gotham, Season 1, Episode 18. Everyone has a Cobblepot, unfortunately. Gordon seeks information about the controversy involving Loeb. Fish's allegiance with the prisoners is questioned, and Bruce copes with the aftermath of an attack close to home. Gary, you gave this one an 8. I gave this a 6.5. So what is it about this episode that you liked? Where maybe I missed something? I don't know. What was your take on this one that you liked it as much as you did?
Well, I do have to admit the title itself and the way it was sort of revealed, to Gordon or by Gordon was I thought really nice. You know, we see all these police officers, and while we don't want to believe every one of them is corrupt, you have to wonder how is such an organization sort of, stuck with all this corruptness. I mean, a police officer doesn't get involved, you would think, in the job to begin with, to be a corrupt guy. And so what is happening? What are the machinations that's causing this to happen? And, and we find out when Harvey's gives this false testimony to get this other dirty cop off, and then Gordon confronts him, and we find out about this whole thing. And as Harvey starts talking, and he says, my Cobblepot never came back. I thought it was a great little, not only a sort of a play on words, but just the way that it's so subtly, sort of implies what happens. We saw Gordon go through it, so we understand it. And now we understand, what happens when it goes wrong, and then what happens as a result after that, the implications of having that person actually killed for you. I thought it was, for this show, I thought it was pretty darn deep. And it shows that there actually is hope for the whole police force, because if we can knock out this person who's blackmailing most of the force, Gotham could turn around. The police force could turn around. Everything could be bright and sunny. I thought that was really cool, and that's probably what pushed it up the highest for me was the Gordon plot. We did also have Fish Mooney plot as well, and that was really getting into freak show territory, pun intended. That's sort of fun, but it almost feels like a complete disconnect of the show, and that's why I couldn't go any higher than 8. So heck, I'd probably rate the Gordon section almost a 10. For me, it was his side was almost a perfect episode. But the Fish Mooney it seems like they're just putting all this shock and horror literally just for the shock and horror, and that there's not much of a storyline to it that I can see connecting back in.
Yeah, that's kind of where I had a problem with it, is that they kept losing me. I did like the stuff with Gordon, don't get me wrong. I just thought it was funny because I really would not want a Cobblepot at this point. And there were some really nice when they went to the one house, and basically you just knew it was going to go completely wrong.
That old couple was a little
So all of that is perfectly fine. I'm actually good with all of that, but then it was the Fish Mooney stuff, and honestly still the stuff with Bruce just isn't connecting for me. It feels like, number one, I'm wondering if they're kind of pulling the trigger on revealing or that who may have been implicated in the death of the Waynes a little too early. But anyway,
respect, they've sort of dropped off on that a lot, haven't they? I mean, yeah, it was the focus opening the series, but we've been detoured by all sorts of things along the way. And I think the last time we sort of touched on it at all was Selina recanting. And even up to that point, I wouldn't say it's been a show focus. Gordon's has had all his own problems to deal with. And, the Bruce thing sort of, he's trying to be trying to like Selina, and it seemed like it had faded off to the background a little bit. So I don't mind it coming back a little bit more in the front. And more importantly, in the comic book world, he does find out who kills his parents. So,
well, not this early, is it? I mean, well, I guess what the part for me is that it's them with this whole thing with Wayne Enterprises board of directors, or whatever you want to call it, being implicated at this point. Is that I just feel like it's kind of, it's way too early if you're going to go there to do it here, I guess you could say. But this is the whole problem I have with Bruce Wayne being involved in the first place. He's too young for it to really make sense for him to be this, to really, be taking on the board of directors, trying to flush out the corruption. I get now that they're trying to make some sort of rough symmetry with what Gordon is doing with the police force, with what Bruce is doing with Wayne Enterprises and all of this, you know, this,
yeah,
but it's just not speaking to me, I guess. But that's, I'm having a hard time just engaging with this show at the moment. It's the Gordon stuff is working okay, but then even so, we've said before, he can't actually win.
Not yet. Yeah.
And that's kind of.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, watch, read, read, and listen, and believe, in the critical myth.